League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Welcome back.
Where'd you go?
Also, happy...
I never left.
Happy belated Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
I did say happy Mother's Day to you live, but we didn't really fully address the impact of moms on this Mother's Day that just passed.
I don't think we talked about it at
all. Not enough. Yeah, it was like a little...
Mm-hmm.
But yo, none of us would be here if it wasn't for mom.
It's literally impossible.
Mom question, I'm putting you on the spot.
Okay.
Did you, when you became a mom,
mm-hmm.
did it come natural for you? Did it come easy? Because there's no books, there's no pamphlet to prepare you for this.
I felt totally comfortable. I didn't have new mom struggles.
Now, did it change you becoming a mom?
I don't know that it did.
Yeah. I guess I gotta ask hubby to really know the real truth.
At my core, I am who I am.
Yeah.
And I have been for a long time pretty sure of myself when it comes to,
like,
I didn't freak out like, oh my gosh, I have a human. I don't know what to do with it. Maybe that's coming from a big family. I don't know.
Yeah.
I am known, even today, I am kind of the baby whisperer.
Really?
Like, babies who don't normally take to other people.
They take to you.
They come to me.
That means you're good
people. They fall asleep. I think it's energy. I think all of that is a part of it. I'm not saying I'm perfect. I definitely made some mistakes. Ask my kids.
Yeah.
They'll tell you. So, both of them.
Yeah.
Brutally honest.
Well, from what I can tell, you're doing a great job as a mom. Big shout out to you and all the moms out there.
Doing the best I can.
Yeah.
With the help of the Lord.
So we're in graduation season. Big shout to all the college grads.
Too.
I saw my nephew graduate. Big shout to him.
Congrats.
You got some graduates in your life?
Got a couple.
Okay, come on, talk about it. Talk about it.
The college graduate and the high school graduate.
Come through, college graduate.
It is. I have no emotions.
Come through, no more tuition.
I'm all cried out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
All cried out. Is that Mary? Who's that?
That would be Lisa. Lisa.
Okay.
And Colt Jam.
Fine.
Can't
okay, Lisa.
Colt
Lisa.
Jam.
Okay. I watched a video today that brought me so much joy.
Really.
Some black girls graduating from somewhere.
High school, college.
You see it?
I saw it.
Yo, that really touched me to just see black folks, black women, black girls just celebrating themselves, just being proud, just being free, like nobody's trying to stop them. Because you don't know what it took to get them across that stage.
You don't know my story
mm-hmm.
or the things that I've been through.
Yeah.
I don't remember the rest of the
lyrics. So then it's been prompting me to ask everybody I come into contact. I'm going to ask you and anyone who I see this week.
So I have two questions for you, though.
Okay.
Do I get to ask my questions first?
And then I'll go to mine.
Thank you, sir. So first question I was going to ask, what'd you end up getting Mrs. Boomer for Mother's Day?
Because
you had not quite figured that out.
Mm.
Are we talking about it or are we keeping that?
So I made her a video.
Mm-hmm.
That brought tears to her eyes, better than any card, more sentimental than any gift.
Okay.
For the low. I did it right on my phone. But then what's crazy, like this was not her Mother's Day gift, but our washing machine happened to have died. Literally the day before Mother's Day.
You're not going to tell me that you bought her.
This was not the gift. But I promise you, she got so much joy from a new washing machine.
Okay. That's fine.
You would have thought I got her a Birkin bag.
That's fine. You're just not allowed to say I bought her a washing machine for Mother's Day.
Absolutely not.
I would have to.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, just it was a video I made.
Well done. And took some thought.
We went to a Broadway show, you know, like I made it happen. We went to go see my man PJ Morton. I told y'all about PJ Morton.
So
that was Mother's Day.
Great. Yes. So full circle. Remember, we were talking about that and I was getting him confused with his father,
Bishop,
the gospel Paul artist. S. Morton. We have ties to New Orleans. So that's why all of that was in my head. Like anyway.
Yeah.
They're going to be at the Hampton. He's going to be at the Hampton Jazz Festival.
Yes. But that Coliseum is indoors, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would go, but I'm not trying to be cooped in. Like,
yeah, Jazz Festival is June. It seems weird, but
big shout. I mean, go if you want to go. There's a competing
down there.
Musical thing going on in Montreal with a lot of great black artists too. So I'm like flipping a coin.
At the same time?
Same exact weekend.
Wow.
Yeah. So I might be in Montreal.
Okay.
Who knows?
My second question.
Okay.
We're coming back to graduations.
We are.
What is your opinion about our HBCUs and particularly D9? Mm-hmm. You know, strolling and doing all the things during the ceremony.
I love it. Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Celebrate. Yes. Frolic. Like, I'm telling you, it brings me so much joy seeing black folks just unbothered.
Right.
Being themselves, celebrating. Because like you said, like, you don't know what folks have been through. So, yeah,
that's
go
true.
For it.
That's
rep your... I won't say your set, but it's your organization.
Right. It's like a house divided, right?
Yeah.
I'm seeing people say that,
of
right?
Course.
Hey, you don't know what it took. But then there are others who are like, well, I'm not part of D9. Like, why should you take over? Like, I don't get to experience that. And then I think it was South Carolina State they had a separate time where they allow organizations and everybody to do.
See, this is the thing.
Like, allowed, permitted.
Like, well, I paid all this tuition. I read all the books.
I did all the exams. I just asked the question.
I'm just saying, like, I'm tired of us being allowed and tolerated. Like, we need to have some spaces where we can just be celebrated.
Okay.
So I'm here for it.
I just wanted to know where you were on it since you brought up the young ladies and the.
Yeah.
It's cool.
But speaking of joy.
Mm-hmm.
There is some pain going on right now. And frankly, it's killing us. And we've been a little quiet on this topic. We started the year on 10, really just shining lights on the ways in which this new administration is just really turning our country upside down. And then we took a break. We've been financial advising.
Yes.
We've been giving advice on entrepreneurship through acquisition and all sorts of things. But we got to get back to this community thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's cool to watch the press conference and to hear the speak of government waste, of fraud and abuse.
Mm.
We know we've got a government deficit problem, and tightening the belt sounds good. But has anyone calculated the cost in the black community of all these government cuts?
Somebody has, but they aren't talking about it.
Or just generally in your local community. Mm-hmm. I'm on a school board of a charter school. And they're feeling the impact.
Mm-hmm.
We have clients that are nonprofit organizations. They're feeling the impact. We have clients that run small businesses that do business with the government. They're feeling the impact.
We have clients who are DEI directors of public school districts in the town next door.
Lord,
so
help me. We have husbands who are...
Team Gray is being impacted.
We have husbands who are DEI.
Dr. Gray's cultural competency course at Rutgers Honors College has not been renewed.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we'll talk about these cuts, but how it really hits home today. And of course, we'll end with some solutions because we can't just be up here complaining, y'all.
Never that.
We got to figure out how to get past it. So this is a special moment for us right now. Like we don't do this. You've been with us on this podcast for a year now.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I lasted.
Time flew.
I told you 3 episodes.
She did.
I'm still here.
She really did. Still here. So we have a special guest. I don't know that we've had too many. Have we had a special guest since you've been here? Maybe
once.
We had Will Platt.
Yep. And that was it.
Okay.
I will say, though, I'm going to take some credit because before I even joined as a co-host, I'm like, you should think about having guests.
Mm. All right. So we'll dedicate this to you.
We don't need to do that.
That's your Mother's Day gift. You see how that happened?
I'm just saying. You're welcome. You're welcome.
So I would like to bring in to the conversation Lawrence Hibbert. I call him Larry.
Mm-hmm.
Larry is the founder, president, and chief technology officer for BCT Partners. Now, if you haven't heard of BCT, it's one of the largest Black-owned management consultants, strategic management, and technology consulting organizations in the country. BCT's been around for over 20 years at this point.
25 years.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And Larry's my big bro. Yeah, I've been rocking with Larry for a long time. I met Larry first back playing basketball on the campus of Rutgers University.
That's correct.
I was in high school.
I want to hear about this.
Yeah.
Because I'm curious about Alan's perspective of how good of a basketball player he is. And I want to hear it from an independent source. But we don't have to spend too much time on it.
We'll get there.
See if we can bake that in.
Yeah, so let me just say something. First, it's a privilege to be out here. I mean, I can't believe I'm out here with my people doing this thing. My man, Alan, we go back to Rutgers.
Yeah.
And we used to, in the summers, used to ball at the courts right outside of Livingston.
Mm-hmm.
Dude could hoop.
Thank you, bro.
Really?
Thank
Dude
you.
Could hoop.
Then and now?
And now, I'm not saying he was better than me.
Oh, okay. That's fair.
But he's a competitor. I love him. Yeah. He's a dog on the court. I love it.
And we played like a couple years ago.
Absolutely.
And I think you said you're still sore from that thing.
Oh, man. I'm just trying to keep the Achilles right where it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. So let me finish bragging on my man Larry
real quick.
So he's, again, founder of this wonderful organization that hit 25 years, which to me, like most small businesses, don't last 2 years.
It's a blessing, man.
Let alone 25 years. And you guys have hired and employed you've had hundreds of employees.
Hundreds over the years, hundreds. I mean, the last time we had 120, 130 employees.
Wow.
And I remember going to a session hosted by the church. Larry's a member of First Baptist Church of Lincoln Gardens in Jersey.
Yeah.
And I remember going to a session, man. And you remember this.
I do.
The topic was landing our first $100 million contract.
Right.
That's huge.
Wow.
Like, a lot of firms will never get to $1 million.
Yeah.
Or two. And these brothers, and this was not like last week. This was like...
It's like 10 years ago.
10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And these brothers were really laying out that game plan for how to grow a business to the point where you're prepared to go out and secure that size of a contract. So I'm super proud of Larry. Larry's a graduate of Rutgers University, where he holds a Bachelor of Science in Mechanical Engineering and also an Executive MBA from the School of Business there. Everybody, join me in welcoming my brother, our brother, Larry Hibbert.
Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. So good to be here.
So let's get into some stats. And Larry, we're gonna freestyle. We always kind of start the show, as you know, with stats. And then we'll get into the meat. But like, I think we got to really get through some of these stats. And just love to hear some of your reactions, Dre, of course. You know, we know we have a budget problem. It's a big problem. Like, nobody's arguing that. We spend $7 trillion per year.
That's right.
And we only bring in like barely
4.8
trillion.
Yeah.
So... And this is the crazy thing. So like,
we're in debt.
And we financed that deficit, which is about $2 trillion.
That's correct.
With a T, as Andre always points out. We're financing it with debt. We're borrowing money. And the crazy thing is, like, we know we need to tighten the belt.
Right.
But like, at the same time, our president is trying to give us a pay cut by cutting taxes. Like, imagine being in a household where y'all make $70,000 a year. And your bills are $100,000 a year.
I've probably been there.
And the solution is, why don't we go get a lower paying job?
Right.
I mean, that's where we are right now.
Doesn't make sense.
While also saying, let's tighten the budget, but let's cut off things that are also going to hurt us in a major way.
Yeah, you know, just when you look at this, right? When you look at this and you look at the deficit that we have, this $1.8 trillion, mm-hmm. We've had that deficit for years.
Yeah.
Every president has had the deficit. And everybody's complained about getting at it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that we have to address because ultimately it will affect us as a country and will affect our grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
Facts.
Got to address it. Mm-hmm. The question is, how?
Yeah.
And most of the times you want to be able to address it in a way that supports the stakeholders mm-hmm. in your country
yep.
and also grows the GDP, grows yeah. the gross domestic product, grows mm-hmm. our ability to produce stuff.
Yeah.
But we're not doing that.
Yeah.
We're doing the kind of Reaganomics trickle-down economy, mm-hmm. and that's what you're seeing being played out with this administration.
And I will say this one thing. We did have a balanced budget under mm-hmm. Bill Clinton.
Yep.
We surplus. Did see, yeah, surplus budget. Under Obama, we saw that deficit shrink. Under Trump 1.0, we saw it expand, and frankly, we're seeing it expand again.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing is, so DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency,
right.
had the goal of cutting $2 trillion from the budget, which would bring us back into balance if we don't go ahead and cut taxes, of course.
Right.
But when you look at what they want to cut, it's not there.
So it's a great point. And there are about four or five major components of our budget.
Mm-hmm.
The first part of that is going to be the large safety net programs,
mm-hmm.
Medicare
and Social Security,
Medicaid, mm-hmm. Social Security.
Yep, those things add up to like $4 trillion. Those three. Then you start adding in defense. That's another trillion. That's five.
Then add the interest, right?
Add in the interest. That's six.
So now you got a real small piece.
Where's the $2 trillion coming from? You literally can't cut it. Unless you start to cut Social Security and Medicare.
That's a fact.
Like, not possible.
Facts.
But you also can't cut Social Security and Medicare.
Yeah, word. And they're not willing to cut defense.
So
I mean, not the bullets and the missiles of defense.
Right.
That's right.
Maybe the DEI of defense.
So aside from the financials, which I know we're going to dive into more, then I'm like, well, who are the stakeholders? I'm not really sure that we... Well, maybe we do know. We just maybe don't want to admit it or accept it. But I think the stakeholders have changed too. But that's a different conversation.
No, talk about it.
I mean, the stakeholders you would think are the American citizens.
Hello.
And now there's like only certain people that we're interested in, you know, acknowledging as stakeholders because we don't really care about anybody else.
Mm. Well, I think that that's at the heart of it, Andrea, right?
Yeah.
At the heart of it is really saying who's important.
Yep.
Who counts.
Mm-hmm.
Who matters.
Yeah. Yep.
And where your policy is defines who matters.
Yeah. So DOGE right now is claiming credit for cutting $160 billion. The goal is $2 trillion. They've cut $160.
And that's not even accurate.
And facts, and it's not even accurate. But what's crazy, I read a report that said that their actions are actually going to cost taxpayers $135 billion. So they cut $160 that we're going to then turn around and pay out $135 in the things that we lost. And examples of things that we lost, the IRS, for example.
Yes.
Cutting 40% of that workforce means that there's $323 billion in tax revenue over the next 10 years that they won't be able to collect based on tax compliance. Now, look, I'm okay if the IRS doesn't come knocking on my door anytime soon. But like, you got to realize there's a cost to these cuts. Like, we can't just not have people at the IRS. Other things you look at...
During tax filing season is when those cuts happen, too, by the way.
Word.
Just saying.
Look at all the medical research that's being cut. Now, that's absolutely insane. Like, you look at these lawsuits, Harvard University, University of Pennsylvania, University of Maryland. Like, there's life loss that's going to come from these cuts. There's... this knock-on effect, this multiplier effect that comes from these job losses.
You know, in addition to the multiplier effect, you know, part of what you can describe that makes America great
mm-hmm.
is its advantage scientifically.
Yeah.
Academically.
Yeah.
Technologically.
Mm.
So when we choose not to invest in research.
Yeah.
In development, we're undercutting our competitive advantage.
Mm-hmm. That's a fact.
And that's what we're doing.
Yeah. You're really like cutting your legs off.
Cutting your nose off to spite your face.
Yeah. job cuts. So they've announced 275,000 job cuts, impacting about 12% of the civilian workforce. That's 2.4 million people. So they're cutting, they're trying to cut about 12% of the workforce. So far, it looks like they've laid off about 121,000 people across 30 different agencies. And it's been absolutely chaotic, as you all know.
Beyond chaotic, you know, so my company, BCT Partners, we're a federal contractor.
Yeah.
80% of my revenue is coming from the federal government. We have contracts, not grants.
Now, hold on. You said contracts or grants?
Contracts. Yeah, so BCT Partners is a federal contracting company.
Mm-hmm.
We do 80% of our business doing contract work with the government.
Mm-hmm.
The work that we're doing right now is dependent upon federal workers that can help us get this job done.
Yeah.
But when everybody is getting riffed, which is a reduction in workforce,
mm-hmm.
or getting laid off, or getting pushed out, we don't have people that are competent enough to be able to make sure that these programs are running.
Come on.
And so we are absolutely undermining ourselves.
Yeah.
Some might say we don't have competent people running the country.
Lord.
I mean.
My Lord.
Oh, yeah. Man, so much.
Yeah, but it's killing us. It's killing us. We got to keep the conversation going after the break. This is getting good, y'all.
It's heavy, really.
Yeah.
That's the reality of it. But we're going to keep it light and a little more fun. I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
And we are the Momentum Advisors.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So we're back?
Yes.
With our guest?
Mm.
How am I referring to you? Because, like, we're all family.
We go back. You got to call me Larry.
Okay, it's Larry.
Larry,
okay.
Larry in the house.
With our guest, Larry Hibbert. And we're going to get into some more about these DOGE cuts and how it's impacting all of us.
Yeah, you know, the one thing, Andrea, that I want to say, and I want to shout out our very good friends that are federal workers.
Yeah, big shout.
Yes.
I've seen them put themselves at harm risk to be able to protect the country.
Yeah.
Trying to make sure that they're protecting the data, stakeholders, grantees, and making sure that things are done properly.
Yeah.
Most of them are nonpartisan.
Yeah.
They're just objective and they've committed to doing the service work and they've been mistreated.
Yeah.
And we got to say that.
Yeah.
Not just mistreated, mischaracterized.
Yeah.
Just point like.
It, yes.
It's been almost a curse word to work for the government now.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what you're doing, no matter what lives you're saving, no matter what the function, if you're a government worker, you've been maligned. by this administration.
And let's just really be honest about it. If you are a person of color and you're a federal employee of the federal government or a government agency, there is a narrative that you are not competent and that you are only given that opportunity because they've changed this narrative about what diversity, equity, and inclusion is.
Yeah, I want to just add a piece to this because these federal cuts affect Black and brown communities, particularly in the DMV area.
Yeah.
In ways in the D.C., in the Maryland and Virginia area. We know that we've got some of the greatest areas and pockets of Black wealth.
Yes.
That's a fact.
In those areas. Mm-hmm. And we've been disproportionately cut in our jobs and in the labor force. And we represent when you're getting a third of HUD being cut.
Yeah.
And 40% of HUD people are Black.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're getting hit higher than our percentages. So the feel that's happening in our community is significant. And when you go to Virginia, when you go to D.C., they are feeling it. We are seeing governors, advocate on behalf of their residents saying we're going to need help.
Yeah.
Because we're cutting good and not just regular jobs. Mm-hmm. We're cutting 20, 30, 40 year vets. That so you're cutting out middle America.
Yeah.
These are middle America jobs that that Black folks have worked very hard for and have done great jobs for that are no longer available. So it's a significant point that we don't talk enough about.
Yeah. Now, you brought up a great point because we saw a labor report come out just a few days ago and the unemployment rate, very good. We added 170,000 new jobs. But if you peel back the onion and dive into those numbers, did you know that in April, Black women accounted for the highest percentage of job losses and that Black women lost 106,000 jobs in April alone? And that unemployment for Black women dipped from 10.3 million to 10.2 million in 1 month? And that the Black unemployment rate climbed from 5% to 6% in 1 month amongst Black women, and that Black women have lost 304,000 jobs since February? Like, these are things that nobody's talking about.
That's real talk, man. That's real talk.
I didn't know this, but I can't say I'm surprised.
Yeah.
When you think about the impact of here, it's not just the loss of these jobs, right? It's the loss of all the knowledge.
Yeah.
For how to care for stakeholders that are getting healthy food programs, school lunch programs, farm subsidies. I can go on and on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those people that understand how to run those programs are gone.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. This is, and if you're not comfortable talking about this, I'm okay. What areas were you guys contracting with the government in? And where have you seen the biggest cutbacks that affect BCT? If you're okay talking about it, and if you want to talk generally about just contractors in general, because we know that there's a lot of Black contracting firms out there. Where are you seeing the cuts the most impacting you guys?
The cuts have hit consulting firms across the board. So the big four, the top consulting firms, Deloitte, Accenture, EY, CACI, those firms have been hit by tens of millions of dollars of cuts.
Yeah.
And they've been demanded that you're going to cut back and pull back. And they actually gave them a cut sheet to tell me how much you're going to cut. And I need you to cut to this amount and tell us how much you're going to cut. And you're going to get rid of those contracts.
Yeah.
So they've seen that across the board.
But that's your question.
Yeah.
My first employer, Deloitte.
Yeah. A contract. Mm. Like in business, a contract is usually pretty firm. And I would imagine a contract with the U.S. government would be worth something. Like, how are these contracts just being cut? Because I imagine if they're going to cut them for the big boys, God knows what they're going to do for the small and middle-sized contractor.
Yeah, so we had some work at HUD. HUD is the
Housing
and Urban Development Department. We were doing work, it's called Community Compass, and the work was, we got a call that $5 million worth of contracts would be terminated for convenience.
What does that mean?
It means that there's a small clause in our contract that gives everybody an out to be able to say, under certain circumstances that I don't need to describe to you, we can pull out of this contract. So it's a clause in most of the contracts. It's often never exercised.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the loop that allows people to pull out of these contracts. And you're seeing that happen. So you'll get a termination, call it term, a term for convenience that says you're terminated, or you'll get a stop work order that says, look, you're going to have to stop this work. Now, we've had so many, there's been so much disruption in the system that has just made it unstable. And made it difficult for us to operate. Yeah. So I can't say one particular place that people are getting hit, but I will say that HHS is getting hit hard. Mm-hmm. We saw that Ed is, and again, does the president have the constitutional authority to dismantle the Department of Education? Mm-hmm. No, he doesn't. But this president has taken the time to really try to limit the amount of resources able for it to execute the legislative mandate that comes from Congress.
Yeah, that's the part that is, you know, not an attorney, but I've struggled to understand is if it took an act of Congress to get these things, these departments, these agencies, these programs into place.
Yeah.
Shouldn't it take an act of Congress to
come on?
It's absolutely. And I think what we're having right now is a constitutional failure.
Mm-hmm.
And the failure that we have is that we don't have the balance of power. Everybody, there are checks and balances.
Mm-hmm.
Congress provides oversight. Judiciary offers oversight. Everybody kind of checks each other so that nobody is acting like an emperor.
Yeah.
But Congress is not doing its job.
Mm.
Right.
For all the political reasons.
Even members of the same party are not in full agreement with some of the things that are going on. So it's just hard for me to, I'm waiting for the civil unrest to happen, unfortunately.
Because the thing is, like, we want the budget to be balanced. Like, don't get
me wrong.
That's correct.
That's facts. Everybody wants that.
But, like, it's a very heavy-handed way that is being done, and it's not being done properly because you're not using the right channels.
Exactly. Like I think back to my, you know, traditional corporate work days, and you know, you go through the performance evaluation. And at one of my previous employers, there would be literally two sections. There's the what and there's the how. And so, you know, there's what you do. What did you do for the past year or past 6 months or whatever the review period? And then there was a whole nother section that was much more subjective. It's like, how did you do it? Did you do it well? Did you do it on time? Did you do it within budget? Did you do it with kindness and compassion? Like the how part is also a struggle because on the one hand, when the administration came into office, it was, oh, we're not sure about this TikTok thing. So we're going to kick the can down the road for 90 days so we can evaluate. But for other things, it was literally the chainsaw approach. So again, it's like, so it's good enough to delay for TikTok, but for everything else, we're just going to cut and slash. Yeah, we're just going to do it right away.
And speaking of the how, there's this view that we can make China pay for it through tariffs. And we, as we discussed in depth on one of our most recent podcasts, like, it is us that pays the tariffs. Like it is not.
The customer pays.
It's literally American companies that pay the tariffs.
Yeah.
And you could tariff all you want. It's not going to close the deficit. Be like it's like our tariffs last year were $80 billion in a deficit that we said is $2 trillion. Like.
It's not going to close the gap.
I don't want to be political, right?
Too late.
Can I say something?
Please do.
So I think one of the challenges that we have is that there are big problems that this country has had. And as a Democratic Party, we haven't tried to address them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's fair.
The deficit is the deficit.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been growing. And there's a point that economists say it's unstable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And inflation will drive us crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Those are facts, right?
Yep.
And, you know, on the other hand, I love free trade and went to school with you guys.
Yep.
But we know that it's not fair. And so now the question is, how do we address it?
Yeah.
And I think we've got to come with some solutions. I don't believe the solutions we have at the table right now are right. But I think to cast a blind eye and say that these are not real issues is also wrong.
Yeah, but I disagree that free trade is not fair.
Okay.
Because I just think that there's certain things that I need that your country has. Why is it unfair for you to give me something that I don't have? Like, how is that unfair?
No, I agree with you. And I think that specialization is right. And countries have to specialize. That's how the global economy works.
Yeah.
But I do think that there are unfair labor laws and advantages that different countries have that have an impact on what we can call quote unquote fair.
Okay.
But I agree.
Yeah. So let's get into these spending cuts. So the concept of discretionary spending versus mandatory spending, like break that down for us.
Yeah. So this whole idea of discretionary versus mandatory spending, I want you to think about the mandatory spending is that you've already made a promise to people.
Yeah.
And you've got to keep out the promise.
Mm-hmm.
Social Security, you already said, I got you covered. So I've been working all my life from the pizza shop all the way to my last job.
Mm-hmm.
And that money needs to be there.
Yeah. What was your first job, Larry?
My first job was, I was a paper boy.
Really?
Yeah, I was a paper boy, man.
That was one of my first jobs,
too. Yeah, yeah,
I forget about that one.
Yeah.
That's a tough hustle
That's a tough hustle.
Because back in those days, you were the billing department.
Everything.
And you were the delivery person. You were customer service.
Keep a little notebook.
You had to keep a ledger. And then I had the double bags. So I put one bag on one shoulder, another bag on the other shoulder, and I was just throwing on each side.
You were using Mafitzes as your vehicle.
Yes. So that's how we was getting down on the bike.
Yeah, on the bike.
Yeah.
Your son, your kids don't know anything about that struggle.
Nah, man. Nah, it was a different kind of world, man.
They don't know what papers are. Like, that's they don't read newspapers,
that's real.
Right?
That's like, real.
This is true.
That's very real.
Yeah.
Tell your kids, there's this thing called newspapers we used to read. It was a simpler time back then.
Yeah.
And we had to get them. All right, so mandatory. So Social Security, Medicare, these things are mandatory. What would you consider to be discretionary?
I was never a paper boy, by the way.
What was your first gig, Andre?
Or a paper person. I worked at Rally's Hamburgers.
Rally's.
There you go.
But y'all know about Rally's.
No, I don't know about that.
That must have been in Louisiana.
That was definitely in New Orleans.
I was about to say, that's deep south right there. That's deep south.
Rally's.
$3.85 an hour.
Ooh, big money.
I got
big
fired
money.
From that job too, but that's another
Wait
discussion.
A minute.
Black woman, first one to go. I'm telling you, ain't that going on. This is the beginning
it's wrong,
of time.
Wrong.
We need to do your reference check again then. You got fired. We didn't know about that. What'd you do?
Do we have time?
Yes.
That's the thing. I didn't do anything. Uh-oh. So Rally's is one of these places, maybe up here, it's like Checkers.
Okay.
Drive through, walk up only. No place to eat inside.
Mm-hmm.
So this is in the summer. We were near a high school, so the lunch rush was real. So they would, once the lunch rush was over, if you were a cashier, I was a cashier,
mm-hmm.
They would make you do, it's called a lot check. Basically, you go out in the lot and you clean up the stuff. So, you know, you got the little dustpan and the thing. So I was asked to do a lot check.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I need to lock my drawer. And they were like, oh, we got you.
Oh, no.
15 years old. What am
I
gonna
say? They ran in that drawer?
Go do the lot check. I come back. I'm exactly $20 short at the end of my shift. Now, my shift.
Yeah.
Mind you, I'm a week away from moving to New Jersey, by the way.
Wow.
So the manager says, well, you're $20 short. So, and I'm like, yeah.
And
like,
that's 5 hours worth of pay. That's like a full day and some change for you.
Right?
That's a whole day.
I'm thinking, so you sent me out on a lock check.
So you could run my register.
Right? I was like, I've never been short, but I'm exactly $20 short. Mm. I'm not thinking I made that kind of a mistake. But long story short, he says, well, you know, when you're more than, you know, a dollar, a couple of dollars short, then you have to fill out this paper. He says, so it's up to you. You can either pay the $20 back or we're going to have to let you go.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was like, I do remember thinking, when you say pay it back, that's an assumption that I took it. And I really was kind of like, so you want me to pay $20 to make $20? Like, it cost me,
a question.
It cost me $2 to get here.
Yeah, let
me bus ask a fare.
So what'd you do with the $20? I'm joking.
I was just like, you know what? My last day is in another week anyway. So
eating at Rally's.
Yeah, that's what happened. Yeah.
We're going to add them next to the target list.
That's it. So let's get back into this.
My manager's name was Don. Okay. I don't remember his last name, but
let's cancel
anyway.
Don.
No,
anybody named
do
Don
that.
That's listening,
it's all
you're
good.
Done.
He needed it more than I did.
That was the mandatory side. What's the discretionary side?
The discretionary side are all the programs that many of us talk about. These are the programs that support housing, economic development, workforce development, children and family related services, health services.
So is education part of discretionary?
Yeah, because there's no specific mandate There's no promise on these dollars, right? Now, I would not say, now education's a large, it's a large domain,
yeah,
right? So when I break down education, you've got all the federal funded student loans.
Mm.
That's a whole different, that's a whole different piece, right?
Yeah.
We've also got all of our title funding that's spoken, that's focused specifically on children, you know, as your husband, right? Understands.
Title one, title two.
Right, right. So it's going to focus on low income students, and yeah, it's also going to focus on students with special needs.
Yeah.
And we've got to be able to support them as well. They are saying that they're not going to touch that particular funding.
Yeah.
But they're going to redirect it, that they're going to move all of the federal loan programs to the SBA.
Yeah.
Kind of crazy.
I heard that.
To the Small Business Administration.
Small Business Administration, because they're like, oh, they deal with loans. They deal with business loans. They should be able to deal with student loans.
Lord. Student loans are big business. So they're going to move it to the Small Business Administration.
We have a president that was in the for-profit education field.
Oh, yes, sir.
And now we're moving student loans into the Small Business Administration.
But because it's a business, right?
Lord help me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So then the second piece is that we're moving all of the title works, right? So all of the school lunch programs and the support for special needs funding. So we're moving all the support for low-income students and special needs funding over now to HHS.
Which is what?
Health and Human Services.
Okay.
And so that's interesting to move that all over to children and family-related services. Again, there's a certain expertise that you have to have. So you're firing all of the folks in ed that knew how to manage the loans, yeah, and manage all the title dollars. And you're saying, I don't need you anymore. I'm going to send this money now and services to HHS, who has no idea on how to manage this. So the only way you can get those programs done, you got to rehire those people and just move them from ed to HHS. But you're not going to do that because you just finished cutting HHS as well. 60,000 workers were cut from HHS. So the same place that you're going to deposit the education, you've already gutted them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you're not going to have the capacity to do that. You also gutted the Administration for Community Living, which focuses on Americans that are older Americans, mm-hmm, and Americans with disability.
Lord.
So we are, the strategy is just
non-existent.
Non-existent.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've seen not only these dollars, but we've seen big grant dollars. So, so they're block grants that the government has. Block grants are a mechanism that the government funds local programming.
Okay.
But they don't know how to do that. The best way to do that is to send it to the states and the states figure it out.
Yeah.
So you have community service block grants. A lot of our nonprofits receive their funding from CSBG dollars. So these community service block grants are responsible for getting local dollars,
okay,
to nonprofits so that they can do the good work, whether it's in seniors, whether it's with our children, whether it's with after school programs. That's how those get funded. We also fund a lot of our health and human services stuff through similar block grants. We do emergency services block grants.
Yeah.
So those grants are very important for the nonprofits that sit in the gap where the government can't reach.
So if I could give that all back to you, the thing that we're cutting are the things that are supporting our most vulnerable citizens.
Facts.
The folks who really, really need it the most.
They need it the most.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're destabilizing the most vulnerable people in this country.
It's killing us, y'all.
And the rationale or some of the feedback is, oh, it's a redistribution. It's a reallocation. We're not, nothing's going away. It's just moving around.
Mm.
But yet you have people in leadership who don't know how to manage these budgets or understand even how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, you got the director of HHS who literally said yesterday, I wouldn't listen to me. I wouldn't come to me for medical advice.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a gap in understanding and how things work. And then we've got a competency issue in some of these cases as well. But we got to go to break and we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about some of the impact that this is having, but we'll also provide some solutions and some strategies like we always do. I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
And we are the Momentum Advisors.
It's the pathway to freedom that's needed. Stop.
Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Momentum.
So we're back. Let's keep talking about some of the other impact areas of the Black community on some of these changes.
I mean, you know, we talked a little bit before about these safety net programs. Mm-hmm. And again, I want you to think about them around housing and Hope 6 housing, being able to get into individuals into their first home and being able to support them, not only getting into the home, but how can I support you with your LIHEAP, which is their low income, their heating assistance and air conditioning assistance, to be able to support them in those ways. We've got to think about the programs like the Senior Community Service Employment Program, which is responsible for supporting low-income seniors getting back into the workforce.
Yeah.
Significant program as well. You know, we've seen the farm aid programs be hit as well. So our brothers and sisters in the Midwest that are farmers, and we know that farmers have already, particularly Black farmers, have mm-hmm. had a disproportionate level of support through the cyclical nature of just what the farming industry is. And now we're losing things like USAID, which was a huge, huge income stream for them to be able to support grains production, you know, externally. So those are examples of places that we're getting hit hard, you know, with this change in administration.
So summarize these impact areas again for me.
So when I think about the work that's being done around small business and small business support, you're going to get less technical assistance than you've gotten before. If I'm a small business owner and I need to be able to get support on how to start up, how to get access to funding and the like, I won't have people that will be able to support me in the way that they may have at my local SBA office.
And that certainly is going to hit some Black communities.
That's hitting Black communities.
And every community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Not only the micro businesses, the startup businesses, they're going to feel that. From an education standpoint, it's still a very much, it just creates an uncertainty. The education piece is a double-edged sword. The first piece of that is directly to students. Mm-hmm. And student support from the federal government, we just don't know how programs like the Pell Grant, which is significant to be able to fill the gap in your financial aid, how that will be supported moving forward. And then we've got the ripple effect of DEI and education and how that has impacted not only the subsidies that sometimes go to HBCUs. We saw in the news that Howard is going to be pushed back economically to funding levels a couple of years ago, and they're going to be losing some of their subsidies to support them. Mm-hmm. In addition, you're seeing the pullback or the rollback of diversity programs at PWIs that support our students for feeling included.
Yes.
And so that ripple effect.
And the crazy thing about it, they've thrown in the A at the end of DEI.
Absolutely.
DEIA.
Absolutely.
And that A is just accessibility for folks that are differently abled.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So right now it's just everybody who's the other.
Yeah.
And if I continue to go through there from the healthcare standpoint, and this is the big issue, Andrea, specifically because as we talked about earlier, you've got to cut these big programs, the Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. When you start doing that, you're going to have a real big problem. And so now the question is, how will they do that? And it's still up for debate. That's what's going to be coming through this summer. The debate for this summer is, how do I address some of these big Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid funding? And is there any rollback on there? And I think that's where, to go back, you're going to see the pushback from America if we end up touching those kinds of funds.
And it sounds like there's no way to not touch those kinds of funds.
If you want,
especially if you've already said the defense on the missiles and the bullets is not getting cut.
That's right, sir.
Yeah. And so,
and I just want to say one last piece, but, and I'm not the lawyer, so I won't try to be one, but we know that we've had a rollback on civil rights.
Yeah.
And we can't, and that's not the financial piece as much as that is pulling back different departments that were responsible for enforcing much of the 1964 Civil Rights Act and the like. So we have to be careful around where we are. And those are the places that have direct impact to us.
On that note, what can we do about it? Because on this show, we're really all about solutions. And there's so many different impacted groups of people in the community that we've talked about, from nonprofits to businesses to individuals and families. Like, what are some of the things, like, I'm kind of like swimming right here for advice. Like, what do you tell?
Just let's start tread water.
Let's start with the nonprofit organizations, because a lot of our clients are nonprofit organizations. Yes. A lot of our listeners work in the nonprofit community. Like, what advice would you give in this climate?
Can I say something just in front of that before we just jump into there? I just think that, first of all, we got to get involved.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, we can't be on the sidelines on this. Like, we've got to understand these issues. I know it feels overwhelming to listen to the news. Don't listen to it. Just go back to reading the newspaper.
Yeah.
But you got to understand what's going on. And we've got to be able to be able to articulate our positions. But to get back to your specific question about nonprofits and community organizations, man, we got to get back to collective work and economics. That's what it comes down to. I mean, we'll go through these pieces, but it's collective work and economics. We've got to be intentional with where we spend our money, how we support each other, how we engage in doing business. Like, we have to be intentional. And I think that that's the overarching theme for how do we address this.
Yeah. And what's so interesting, you said we've got to really be paying attention.
Yeah.
There's so many things distracting us. Like, literally, look at your social media. Everybody's talking about Diddy and Cassie, which was a horrible situation for Cassie, by the way. And we're debating this.
Yeah.
Like, for one, like, somebody asked us for our opinion. But for two, like, hell, how can you justify the brutalization and the rape of a woman? Like, how is there anything she could have done that makes her deserve that? And also, she's not the one on trial, by the way. It's him. And the government subpoenaed her. She didn't sue anybody in this case. I digress. But we do have to pay attention to the real things that matter.
We got to stay focused. Sure. We got to stay focused.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We got to stay focused.
And then also, I would imagine if you're a nonprofit organization and your biggest line item is grants that come from the federal government.
Right.
You're in a tight spot right now.
You are. I mean, all of us that rely on, I mean, we underestimate how big of a reach the federal government has in our lives.
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of, you see it with Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Harvard fortunately has big enough pockets and a deep enough endowment to push back and say, hey, we're not going for it.
Right.
But that's the lesson, right, Andrea? That's the lesson. The lesson is we've got to make sure that we strengthen ourselves economically.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that we are not so reliant upon the federal government to be able to do things.
Absolutely. I was shocked at, I was aware of the depth of Harvard's endowment. I was completely unaware of how much funding they were getting from the federal government.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And you know, and again, a lot of their funding was to keep our advantage, scientific funding, cancer research.
Research, yeah.
And the like, important work,
and
important work that we need to fund to allow us to maintain our edge. But when you've got, you know, when you got administration doing what they're doing, it reminds us that we've got to stay strong economically.
Diversifying income streams. We give that advice often because we never know which one of those revenue streams could dry up or be disrupted.
So the other thing that I would add in there is that it's important for us to be, is to form coalitions. And what I'm saying is that there are already organizations that are on the ground doing this work. You know, when we have had pushback from the federal government, we did go to the ACLU and they are doing good work. We need to be supporting them.
Yeah.
We need to go to Urban League. We need to go to NAACP. Like, we need to support the organizations that are already on the ground doing this work, and make sure that we stand behind them, because they're going to be supporting our economic agenda.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. That's powerful. What about for businesses? What advice would you give to entrepreneurs in this environment?
You know, in times of uncertainty, you got to stay lean. This is not the time to be trying stuff out. Right? Now, there is opportunity to invest.
Sure.
Like, if you've got money that's sitting on the side, mm-hmm. be strategic and invest. But if you're not in that position, make sure that you can hunker down for a little bit of a rocky road.
Yeah.
You know, we've had to do it as well. We've had to do cuts, and it's horrible. It's horrible. It's one of the worst parts of my job, of having to lay people off or to close down operations. But I knew it was necessary for us to stay in a place where we are in the game. Because what we have to do is we have to keep our businesses in the game.
Yeah.
And that means some tough calls around what you do economically. So make sure you stay in the game, whatever that is.
Yeah. When you all think about cuts, obviously at a consulting firm, human resources is probably your biggest expense. But like, what other types of cuts could you possibly make? Like, when you guys were contemplating things, or things you are contemplating right now, like what are all the different things that y'all think about?
I mean, the first thing that you want to try to do is to cut G&A, or general administrative costs.
Yeah.
Like, are we spending too much money on paper and pens and, you know, and the like? So you want to make sure that you can address those kinds of things. Do you have consultants that you're using that you don't really need, that's not really offering you value? That's another thing you can try to cut. You know, you can begin looking at some of your health benefits and trying to see if there's other ways that you can do it more effectively for your people. But that's a balancing act as well. But the last thing is people. Is that you would cut people, but we're in the people business. So ultimately, that's the biggest portion of our budget.
And I would imagine, as an entrepreneur, sometimes the owners have to take it on the chin a little bit.
Oh man, we've taken personal salary cuts, compensation cuts, and the like, one, to spare some of the burden on our staff, but we have a responsibility. They're our staff, you know, and that they look to us, and we feel responsible.
Yeah. What do you view as the role, like, as an entrepreneur, how do you view capitalism? How do you view your role as a business owner? What is the goal? Who are you there to serve truly?
That's a great question. And every business owner is going to answer it differently. I'm going to give you my answer. I believe that we're here to do good and do well at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I believe in the double bottom line. I believe that I have no success if my brothers and sisters don't have it either.
Yeah.
So there's no way that I can just do stakeholder value only and say, hey, I got to drive as much value into my pocket and then walk away and look at my brother or sister that does not have. So if we all can't win, it's not a win.
Yeah.
And so for me, that's the balancing act, being able to do it in a way that I honor the people that have committed to this work, and do it in a way that is sustainable.
Wow.
So how about locally? What are some things we can be doing to engage, respond, be strategic in our local communities?
It's a great question as well. I want to say that we've got to take a play out of the book, and let's go back to the 50s and 60s, right? At that point, we started developing modes of self-sufficiency.
Mm-hmm.
We invested in our churches, our nonprofits, our synagogues, our mosques. We recognized that if nobody was going to teach, we were going to teach.
Yeah.
And everybody figured out what they could bring to the table. If you knew A and he knew B and she knew C, there was going to be a way that we were going to start teaching these babies that on Saturdays and Sundays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think we've got to get back to the collective and cooperation in our communities. And we've got to use the mechanisms that are already there. Our churches want to do, they have done this.
Mm-hmm.
Our synagogues have done this. Our mosques have done this. And we've got to support those places. We've got to support our local community centers and local governments that are doing, like, that's the stuff that we can support. So I think it's very, very important that we double down on that. I think about the food bank here at Franklin.
Yeah.
Like, we need to be giving to the food bank.
Yeah.
We need to be supporting that. We got coats. We need to be giving that to the shelters, and let's support each other. and let's find ways that we can do things on the local side, and everything will scale.
Yeah. And some of this stuff, clearly we talked about the impact on the Black community, but I would imagine this is also an opportunity in time that really crosses racial lines, that Absolutely. Crosses all kinds of different ways you could dissect us.
I love that you just said that, because again, and you know, I don't want to get super political, but let's look at the Black Panther movement and let's look at what happened in the 60s. And there was a coalition, and there was a poor people's coalition.
Mm.
Yes. Dr. King saw the same thing. He started recognizing that the reality is that this country, particularly those people that are in power, have tried to use race and ethnicity against us, but all of us that are poor.
Yeah.
Are really sitting in the same space. So we need to create coalitions across that need. And this country has not wanted to see us get organized in that way, because the real needs of the rural farmer and the urban Black person and the Latino that may be, you know, in California, that there's some similarities in there. If we would come together and break down some of these racial barriers and recognize that we're all sitting in the same status place and that we have power in our coalition to be able to reframe what our prosperity looks like.
Brother, if you don't preach.
I love that you spoke to that so much, because it makes me think about who are really the stakeholders, right?
Yeah.
You started with that.
So one of the faces of the administration has a role that has to do with trade. And I listened to him a few weeks ago on one of the financial media outlets talk about the Mag 7. So the Mag 7, we there are certain companies, we may have talked about this on our prior.
The Magnificent Seven, mega cap stocks.
And he says, you know, when we look at the S&P 500, most of the wealth that was generated are from these 7 or 8 companies. And like 80 to 90% of the wealth that was generated by just a few people.
That's right.
And if we implement these tariffs and implement some of these other policies, really what we're doing is we're leveling the playing field. Lord. So the other 80 to 90% of the companies on the S&P 500 can participate in a wealth that's concentrated with just a few. So I was just like,
is that DEI?
I'm like, yeah. So I'm like, so that's good for business, but it's not for people? Like, who are we kidding, right? Yeah. You're not kidding anybody. And the reality is, you have already said it, this impacts more than just Black folks.
It does. It does.
And we've all got to recognize the impact to all of us. I mean, we could pull out all the quotes, all the things, right? Injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere.
That's right.
Like, but all of those things ring true. Like, in some ways, it feels like we are in the 1960s, but maybe some of the things that we were doing, we need to go back to basics.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
So we're having a great conversation and we're almost out of time.
I'm fired up now.
Yeah, I'm ready to fight too.
Yeah,
I got to ask y'all a question before we go. This is a question I was going to ask at the beginning, but I think it's a very good way to end the show. When is the last time, I'm going to start with you, Andrea. Mm-hmm. When is the last time you felt an immense level of joy? What was going on?
Gosh, I'm so fortunate. Like, I get to have those moments often, especially lately. But one moment that...
Smiling ear to ear. You were so happy. What was the last time?
It wasn't that long ago. We've talked about my daughter, who's an athlete. And she had just, like, one of her best performances at, like, the best moment of her high school career. And we thought she had it in the bag. We thought she had won. And even though she didn't, she was just so close to her goal that I was just so excited for her. It happened to be in front of the coach for the school that she's now going to compete with. But like, I don't know. It was joy, not because of what she accomplished, but it was, we've talked about this, like the journey. Because in that moment, I recognized like, it wasn't so much about the moment as it was about the culmination of the journey.
Love that.
And it was pretty special.
That's
great. It's like her dreams are coming true. It was something she wanted for herself.
Yeah. Because you can't want it for her.
I can. I tried not to be
and
involved.
And she wanted it. And she
wanted it for herself. Her dreams are coming true.
I love that. Yeah. What about you, Larry? Last time you felt an immense level of joy and happiness? What was going on?
Man, I'm really, really trying to think about that right now. That was good, Andrea. I'm probably going to say it had to be something with my kids.
Yeah.
I think we just have a tremendous level of joy in seeing their growth and the development. You know, as I see both of my sons kind of grow and develop as young men, when I think about the decisions that they make, the decisions to do and the decisions not to do, the learning that they're making, I'm like, wow, they're going from boys to men.
Yeah.
And they're doing it in a way with kind of honesty and integrity and with love. So that makes me very happy.
Yeah, I love that.
What about you, man?
So mine was on Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Yeah, on Mother's Day for my wife, the biggest thing was having her kids together.
Mm.
And my son is working on a film or a music video or something. He's in the film industry. And he had to be on set all day the day before and all day on Mother's Day. But we worked it out, he and I, where he could come home for just a few hours. He arrived on Mother's Day morning at like 2 a.m. and he was able to stay at home until about 12 or 1 o'clock the next day.
Nice, nice.
So literally just enough time for him to go to sleep but have breakfast. But when my wife saw him, she was overjoyed.
Oh.
And that was just, it made me so happy to see her, to see them, to see the other kids rally around him. And it just gave me so much happiness. That's the last time I just felt my heart soar recently.
That's beautiful, man.
The theme here, though, was that the joy came from other people.
Mm.
Right.
Even though it may be people that are connected to us, right? It was in other people.
Yeah.
I'm just something I noticed.
And I'll just add one other thing. I think the joy comes when you see the hope,
yeah.
Right? And we said that it's killing us,
yeah.
But I want people to know that there's hope. That yeah. That
I believe that.
That light and dark can't operate in the same place. You just have to make a decision to turn on the light
because
the dark will have to flee.
Yeah.
So let's just turn on the light. Let's have hope. Love each other.
That's it.
The doors of the church are open. Let the light in. There is hope.
Yeah, that was a gem, Brother Larry. Thank you so much for joining us today,
yes,
man.
Yo, yes, big up, yes. Big up, big
really
up.
Really appreciate you.
Applause.
A big shout to you, to your family, to BCT Partners.
Oh, yes. Man.
And before we go, why don't you drop all your handles, your website, yes. So folks can stay in touch with you.
Must do.
Fantastic. BCT Partners. We're at bctpartners.com. You can reach us on the internet. I should know all of that other stuff, but I am not savvy enough. But if you go to BCT Partners, you'll find our Instagram and LinkedIn and Facebook and the like. So go to bctpartners.com.
And you've got one kid in college, one headed to college. Where are your kids at school? Come on.
Man, I'm so proud. I went to Rutgers, but I am an HBCU sold out parent.
Mm.
So my oldest son, Caleb, is a second year, finishing his second year at Hampton University.
Wow.
He's killing it over there. And I love the community. My youngest guy, Josh, is on his way to Howard University. So we are on both sides of the HU.
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
You are all the way in.
We all the way in.
Love it. Love it. Well, I hope y'all have enjoyed this conversation about, yeah, it's killing us, but we also gave some really, really great solutions on how to get through it. And we appreciate you, Brother Larry, for just being a part of that conversation. And we'll be back next week. You know where to find us. And if, as always, if you need to talk about your financial situation, visit us on the web at momentum-advisors.com. The contact page will get you on the calendar for either me or Andrea. And we look forward to talking to you soon.
I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
And we are the Momentum Advisors.
League Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.